This is Roger Penske, and you're listening to Pit Pass Indy, sponsored by Penske Truck Rental.
IndyCar fans, it's time to start your engines. Welcome to Pit Pass Indy, a production of Evergreen Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Martin, a journalist who regularly covers the NTT IndyCar Series. Our goal at Pit Pass Indy is to give racing fans an insider's view of the exciting world of the NTT IndyCar Series in a fast-paced podcast featuring interviews with the biggest names in the sport. I bring nearly 40 years of experience covering IndyCar and NASCAR, working for such media brands as NBCSports.com, SI.com, ESPN Sports Ticker, Sports Illustrated, Auto Week, and Speed Sport. So let's drop the green flag on this episode of Pit Pass Indy. Welcome to this week's edition of Pit Pass Indy, presented by Penske Truck Rental and Hy-Vee, as we continue our fourth season of giving IndyCar fans a behind-the-scenes look at the NTT IndyCar Series and the drivers and teams that compete in the Indianapolis 500. We want to welcome back our friends from Hy-Vee, who will be sharing the show at Penske Truck Rental this month and again in June in the big buildup to the Hy-Vee IndyCar Race Weekend at Iowa Speedway, July 12th through the 14th. This year's schedule includes a night race at Iowa Speedway on Saturday, July 13th, with another full race scheduled for Sunday, July 14th. Four of the biggest names in entertainment will perform before and after each race, including Luke Combs, Eric Church, Kelsey Ballerini, and Post Malone. Combs will perform on the Hy-Vee stage on Saturday, July 13th, before the first NTT IndyCar Series race of the unique doubleheader weekend for 90 minutes. After the Saturday race, Eric Church takes over on the Hy-Vee stage for another 90-minute concert. Another country music star, Kelsey Ballerini, will perform a one-hour concert following the race on Sunday, July 14th. Post Malone will bring the house down when he rocks the stage after Ballerini's performance for another 90-minute concert to wrap up the Hy-Vee IndyCar Race Weekend at Iowa Speedway. It will be the first time the famed entertainer has performed in Central Iowa. But this week, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is serving as the epicenter of two big events. The first was on Monday, April 8th, when close to 50,000 fans from 49 states, the District of Columbia, and more than 21 other countries and territories, including Argentina, Austria, Brazil, Canada, the Czech Republic, Dominican Republic, England, France, Germany, Greenland, Japan, Lithuania, Mexico, Northern Ireland, Philippines, Poland, Romania, South Africa, Spain, Sweden, and Switzerland all came to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. They were there to witness a once-in-a-lifetime event, a total solar eclipse. Indianapolis was ground zero for 100% totality. That hasn't happened in that area since September 14th, 1205, when the land was populated by the Potawatomi, Shawnee, Kickapoo, Delaware, Winnebago, Wea, Wyandotte, Ottawa, Chippewa, Menominee, Fox, Sauk, and Creek tribes of what was considered Miami land. The last total solar eclipse visible in parts of Indiana was on August 7th, 1869, with totality in Bloomington, Greencastle, Terre Haute, and Evansville, but Indianapolis was not in the direct line of totality back then. The IMS Total Solar Eclipse event presented by Purdue University was designated one of several official broadcast sites for NASA TV's coverage of the astronomical phenomenon. Among the guests in attendance were members of Indiana's congressional delegation, Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb, NASA Deputy Administrator Pam Melroy, and Mark and Rick Armstrong, the sons of Purdue graduate and the first man on the moon, Neil Armstrong. Multiple astronauts and NTT IndyCar Series drivers were also in attendance. Drivers and astronauts were featured throughout the day as subject matter experts, as well as participating in an autograph session to conclude the day's events. Two educational programming tracks ran concurrently. The Sun track was more technical in nature. The Moon track was tailored for youth and families. All programming featured experts from NASA, Purdue University, and IndyCar. At the start of the NASA TV global broadcast, the NTT IndyCar Series was on full display for those in attendance on the big screens at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Three-time Indianapolis 500 pole winner Ed Carpenter turned a handful of demonstration laps on the 2.5-mile oval in an Ed Carpenter Racing Chevrolet just before the start of the Toller Solar Eclipse sequence. Once the demonstration laps concluded, guests were invited to the front stretch of the famed oval where they could experience the total solar eclipse. As for the 2.5-mile track service at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, NTT IndyCar Series teams began arriving on Tuesday, April 9th, to begin setting up for a two-day Indy 500 open test scheduled for Wednesday, April 10th and Thursday, April 11th, weather permitting. The two-day full-field Indianapolis 500 open test was open to all teams entered in the 108th Indianapolis 500, an important chance to test their race cars for the month of May at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Our guest on today's Pit Pass Indy is Penske Corporation President Bud Denker. We cover a wide range of topics from what went right and what needs to be improved in last month's $1 million challenge at the Thermal Club to this week's Indy 500 Open Test, next week's Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach, and the ongoing negotiations for a new television contract. Will IndyCar stay with current partner NBC, or will it move over to Fox beginning next season? Also, Denker talks about the 108th Indianapolis 500, followed by the Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix, and two big events that Hy-Vee is involved with, including the big weekend at Iowa Speedway in July, and a doubleheader on Labor Day weekend at the Milwaukee Mile in September. Here is my exclusive interview with Denker for Pit Pass Indy. Joining us now is an old friend and a loyal supporter of the show. It's Penske Corporation President Bud Denker. Bud, we're getting ready for Indianapolis 500 open test at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway this week. This is going to be an exciting time for a lot of the teams that are entered in the Indianapolis 500, and it also really kicks up the energy level of promotion for people to realize the Indianapolis 500 is not that far away. So how important is the two-day open test at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway?
Well, thanks, first of all, Bruce, for having me on your show. Again, I appreciate the invitation. You know, if you talk to Doug Bowles, president of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, he'll tell you this test is so, so very important. When people hear the cars going around the track, it just tells them that it's time. First of all, spring's arrived. And secondly, it's time to go racing back at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So it's very important for us to get a kickoff to the season, knock some of the rust off. But if you've recently been to the Speedway, there's no rust there at all. Roger has continued to put his fingers all over this gem and jewel. And we're now getting ready to host over 300,000 people. In fact, this test will further accelerate the growth we're seeing this year over last year. We're over 13,000 tickets ahead of last year at this time. The snake pit is up over 20% from last year. Carb day is up over 15% from last year. We're looking at some amazing numbers of people are going to turn out for this great event later in May.
Now, before we look forward to the rest of the season, into the month of May, and also to the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach, I want to look back a couple of weeks ago at the Thermal Club, where IndyCar had its $1 million challenge. Fact of this event was two full days of testing, and then you were going to have this all-star type exhibition race that goes with it. The value of that weekend was probably more with the testing necessarily than the event, but I do realize that on race day there was some mixed reviews to the way that event went. From your viewpoint, what did you think of it?
Well, I think you hit it right in the nose, Bruce. We could have gone to some other track, Sebring or somewhere else, and done testing, right? And had nobody show up and have nobody really get excited about the IndyCar event appearing on TV. So there were several different objectives that we looked at relative to going to Thermal. Number one, we had a 6-week gap between the St. Petersburg race and Long Beach. 6 weeks. You don't want to be dark for 6 weeks. So having this right in the middle of that gap provided us some awareness to people once again that we're back racing. The St. Petersburg race was just incredible in terms of the attendance and the viewership that we had. But also going up to Long Beach, it will be equally as strong because Jim McCallion, the president of the race, has said their attendance is up and so is sponsorship up as well, too. So number one, fill that gap. Number two was, as you said, allow people to get back on the racetrack and test their cars. You know, we don't do enough testing, frankly, in ways we want to conserve costs and watch the cost lid and cap. So therefore, we had a great time to go there for 3 days and for all the teams to test their cars. And number three was to try some new things. You know, we haven't done this in a long, long time, have an exhibition race. And we also haven't done the kind of qualifying we had there in 10-minute sessions and got a chance to go out and put one really good lap down. We also have never used push to pass in qualifying, and we tried it out there as well. So people shouldn't forget the fact that why we were there were those objectives in itself. And that would say the final one, Bruce, would be if we ever went back there and did a points race, how would that track race? And that we got a good handle on as well, too. So we shouldn't forget our intentions and purpose for going there. And those four reasons were the biggest reasons why we went there overall.
Were you surprised, though, by some of the comments that some of the fans may have voiced on social media?
Well, sure. I mean, you're obviously going to have people that are approve and disapprove of things. You're never going to make everybody happy. As I tell my sons, some people if I gave them five $20 bills versus $100 bills, they would complain it wasn't $100 bill, right? So you're always going to have people that are not, you know, see the way that you may see things, and you're never going to satisfy everybody. But hey, but there's also some good feedback. We got some great feedback from the drivers, from some fans, from some writers about if we did this again, how could the format change? And that's what we're looking for, is that constructive feedback that helped us. If we did this, to do this again next year, if Tim Rogers were to have us back next year for some kind of format, we could try things differently. So, hey, as I mentioned, we accomplished our objectives. We tried something new. It would have been so easy to do nothing. And that's the easy way out. And we didn't do that. We pushed ourselves and pushed the drivers and pushed the teams to make something creative happen, and we did that.
If you were going to do a all-star type race or a million-dollar challenge such as that, would you maybe give thought to a 25-lap race mandatory green flag pit stop? That way it spices the show up a little bit. What we saw was Alex Palou lead every lap of both 10-lap segments. This would be one where it would also bring the pit crew into play.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the feedback mechanisms we got as well, was allowing the crews to shine, right? The point of separation and the pit stops that are so critically important to our series. So that's an idea that we took away from it. You know, another idea that I talked to many drivers about was they love the push to pass during the race. They love getting several different sequences of push to pass, 40 seconds in the first session, 40 seconds in the second session. What if you allowed no defending push to pass, meaning that the guy in front of you that you're looking to pass, he can't use his push to pass to defend. So these are all ideas that came out of going to thermal. And frankly, I go back to my original point. We wouldn't have got these ideas had we done nothing. We would have gotten none of these ideas had we sat in our hands. And that's the easy way out. We don't want to take the easy way out. We want to be innovative. We want to be creative. We want to try new things. Some things are going to work. Some things won't work. But you know what? You never know until you try it.
And also, you probably wouldn't have wanted to make a drastic competitive change in an actual race, a points-paying race.
Yeah, no, you don't. And once again, there's some ideas we take away for even points-paying race in the future. For instance, the qualifying with push to pass is one that was surfaced many times by people. Do you do that in your future qualifying? We don't know. We'll continue to ask the drivers and teams for their feedback. But hey, like I say, we learned a lot. We got some terrific understanding of what things we could look at in the future. And if we go back and do another similar event, how we could change it up also, including what you mentioned before, would you include the pit stops as one of the key ingredients?
So how did you think the track raced?
You know, I think that I got to first of all hand it to Tim Rogers and his team. You know, we were out there last year, and the drivers were like, they're mixed in terms of the track itself and could it race. But I think if you ask the majority of the drivers now, they'd give it a thumbs up. The tires degraded very well, and that provides some interesting racing, okay? The push to pass and maybe not use of a defending push to pass, maybe help out more in the racing standpoint in the future. But I also want to congratulate Tim on the safety measures put in place. They installed a lot of new safety features that the typical fan would never see. And we saw those in play, especially with Marcus Ericsson's shunt that he had the day before the race. So great job and kudos to Tim and his team for what they provided us out there, the members who allowed us to be there. But I think the track proved itself that it is race worthy. And I think using a combination of tires maybe in the future, think about it, if you even had red tires there or our green wall tires there, would even degrade even more. What kind of test that would give the drivers and another tool in their tool chest to put out in the track. So I think it raced well, and I think it proved that in the racing we saw.
The importance of having 9 hours of testing for all of these teams, to me, that really seemed to be the really important aspect of the weekend. Yeah, we got to see a race on TV. We got to see the stars of IndyCar showcased. But as far as the inside baseball, inside racing crowd, they really have a lot that they can try during 9 hours of testing. Just how valuable was that? And some of the things they learned, we'll see those implemented for the rest of the season.
Oh, no doubt about it, Bruce. That's, as you say, one of the key lessons you take from going to thermal and having the event was the testing. And as I said before, we could have easily gone somewhere else and tested and had not a fan show up, nobody watching it on TV because it is just testing. And we didn't do that. We allowed the teams to do a lot of testing, damper testing, wing setting, you know, air pressure, whatever it may be. We saw a lot of hectic pace going on in the pit lane all weekend long by drivers using different setups, preparing themselves for different races coming up. Is it Road America? Is it Mid-Ohio? Does this setup allow us to do something different in Long Beach? So these are all things that I think people took away and learned from than just having an exhibition race on a Sunday afternoon.
So there were 816,000 people who saw the race on NBC. Obviously, you wanted a higher rating than that, but were you surprised by that? What do you think some of the reasons are for that number?
Well, we weren't sure what the number would be, right? It's an exhibition race. So what would you have? We had no idea. We really didn't know. And because it wasn't a points-paying race, so what did you have on there? Now, we had some stiff competition, obviously, in terms of what was going on, in terms of some of the basketball such going on that weekend. So, hey, we'll take the numbers we had because, as I said before, it would have been very easy to have zero viewership by doing nothing than it would be to have over 800,000 people watching us in an exhibition race, which is what we did on that Sunday afternoon.
Now, the other important thing about the Thermal Club is there's a lot of business-to-business opportunities because of some of the residents that live there. They work for some major corporations. They are car enthusiasts. There may be few people in there that may not be involved with IndyCar that may look at this weekend and say, that's something that I would like me and my company to get involved with. So were there any fruitful discussions or just preliminary discussions with some people asking you, hey, how can we get involved?
Well, I hope we had some of that going on with the teams. Now, if you remember, we embedded one of the members of the club with a team, and they were there with them the whole weekend. And I met a couple people and we're just so over the moon seeing inside baseball, inside the ropes, as I call it, with a team. So whether those happen within the team environment, I don't know. But certainly these are people that are, as you said, car enthusiasts, race enthusiasts, motorsports enthusiasts. And it's one more byproduct that could come out of this event, having it where it was. And, you know, as you probably not the primary objective, what we put down originally, the four I gave you before, but certainly, you know, it's something that could come to be. I don't know of those things right now to answer your question, but you never know.
For a lot of fans, they wonder, why does an IndyCar race here? Why don't they race there? But you're involved in the scheduling of the season. And how difficult is it to find places where the climate is good in February and March, and also the competition level that you're up against other sports doesn't prohibit? Obviously, you're not going to run a race on Super Bowl weekend. You could find a great location, but that's just not going to work from a TV standpoint. So how difficult is it to really put a season schedule together that allows you to race earlier in the year?
Well, as you said, it's very, very difficult to put the schedule together. Just ask any motorsports series, whether it be NASCAR, NHRA, you know, Formula One, whatever. You follow the sun, you follow the weather. Okay, so, and we do that obviously beginning every year in St. Pete. But what's after that? Where then do you go to? It has to be another warm weather area in April. So you're not waiting until May when Indy opens up to go from March till May. That would be disastrous from a series momentum standpoint. So you really follow the weather. You also follow a couple other factors. You follow the factors that you want a good mix of ovals, street courses, and road courses. So where is that going to happen? You also have to follow the schedule from your network providers. You have to talk to NBC, and they have to fit you based upon what their schedule is too, because there's some weekends we can't be on NBC for conflicting schedules that they have as well too. So it is a very intricate puzzle that you have to work with when you put together your schedule, from market factors, from competitive factors. I mean, for instance, you can't have NASCAR racing the week after you, the week before you. They don't want that, and we don't want that. So those factors all come into play, which is why this year we didn't go back to Texas Motor Speedway, was because NASCAR now is racing there in the month of April, and you can't encroach upon them versus us or us versus them. So those factors all go into play. So we've got a decent schedule we're developing now for 2025, but you can't put that totally together, Bruce, until we've determined who our partner is going to be in the media side, which we're obviously working on, you know, day and night right now.
If you could talk a little bit about where things stand in those negotiations. Fox has been identified as an interested partner, and I know that there's still a lot of people within the organization that really love what NBC offers you in terms of the platforms that they have. So how would you assess the way the television negotiations are at the moment?
Well, as you said, we've got a really good partner with NBC. You know, John Miller and Sam Flood, and of course their announcers, Lee and Townsend and James, have done a great job for us in providing the color for the races, the inside nature of the what goes into racing. So we love the relationship we have with NBC. On the other hand, you know, it's an open market, right? A competitive market out there. So we want to be able to look at other alternatives as well too, and we are. And the good news, I would say, Bruce, during this negotiation process is we have others interested. You always want competition. You want competition on the racetrack. You want competition in the industry for your media rights. And that's going on right now. And Mark Miles and Jonathan Gibson are driving that for us as a company and doing a very good job. And we hope that perhaps by the month of May, we'll be able to announce that that partnership either with NBC continuing or perhaps with somebody else. But we'll see. Give us another month and a half or so. I think those will be decided.
We'll be right back to Pit Pass Indy after this short break. In the world of racing, Penske means performance and winning. For good reason. Since 1966, Team Penske has won 44 national championships, 17 in IndyCar alone. And last year, Team Penske claimed its Indianapolis 500 record-extending 19th Indy 500 win with Joseph Newgarden, the latest driver to win the famed race. Team Penske also won its second straight NASCAR Cup Series championship. In 2022, Penske was the first team in history to win both the IndyCar and the NASCAR Cup Series championships in the same season. Team Penske enters the 2024 NTT IndyCar Series season with 236 IndyCar wins, including 34 500-mile race victories. Those are results that are tough to top. But Penske's legendary reputation for quality and attention to detail makes a statement off the track, too. When you need a truck, whether for your business or for a household move, Penske Truck Rental has some of the cleanest, newest, and best-maintained vehicles on the road. And we make it easy with personalized support from our associates, flexible reservations, and access to the top technology. With quick pickup and drop-off at more than 2,500 locations across North America, our scale and know-how will keep you covered, all helping to ensure you get the right, reliable, fuel-efficient vehicle when and where you need it. On the highways, the raceways, and every pit stop in between, Penske keeps you moving forward. Gain ground with Penske. Get a quote today at PenskeTruckRental.com or, for household rentals, download the Penske Truck Rental mobile app today.
This is Will Power of Team Penske, and you're listening to Pit Pass Indy, presented by Penske Truck Rental.
Welcome back to this week's edition of Pit Pass Indy. Here is part two of my exclusive interview with Penske Corporation President Bud Denker on Pit Pass Indy. Some of the drivers, such as Pato O'Ward, very popular driver from Mexico, would love to see a race in his home country. He's very popular. You see a lot of Pato shirts at a lot of the races. Where does IndyCar stand in possibly going into Mexico in future years for a race?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you asked the question, because when I was in Thermal, I met with Patricio, which is, Pato's father. I hadn't met him before. Michael Montrai, I met him a few times, and Michael Montrai works in the IndyCar series, is really in charge of all of our promoter relations, but also assists myself and Mark and a few others about where we go in the future from a strategy standpoint for our race venues. So met with him, and of course, he's very bullish on us going down to race in Mexico. So we made the connection for the first time, and I committed to him, and he committed to me. We'll follow up on those discussions as well, too. But, you know, they don't happen overnight. Obviously, they have to happen from a scheduling standpoint that's conducive for the local market, the local track, but also for us and for our broadcast partner. But I think until we understand who their broadcast partner is going to be, you know, those things will come into play. It wouldn't be a 2025 opportunity, because these things do take time. Any international race takes time, but certainly for 2026, that's something that would be on our radar screen. And we've told the owners this in the past as well, too. It's of interest to us, as well as potential other international markets as well. Nice thing about Mexico is you can get down there and you can drive your transporters, you can drive them back in a coordinated effort across the border and back. So it's not having to ship stuff, you know, and planes and trains and whatever. You can get there and back, you know, I think Dallas to Mexico City, if I remember right, is about a 19-hour truck drive. So that can be done. And you could also make it a points-paying race if you're going that far down. Why wouldn't you? So it depends upon the time of year. It depends on the local schedule, but also depends upon our new partner in the future who's going to be broadcasting our races. So, but yes, we do have interest in going to Mexico.
There are a lot of people who even want to go one step further and suggest like an international tour in the season to me that pays points. But do you think at some point this is IndyCar? What you're trying to do is create an IndyCar series, not necessarily become a series that resembles Formula One.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point that you just raised. You know, we have been on a North American racing series for sure, much like NASCAR has been as well, too. You know, we're obviously expanding more broadly overseas because they have so many drivers that race overseas, and now we're shown in many more markets around the world. And that's one of Michael Montrai's responsibility also, is to have international rights across the globe. So I think the opportunity of going beyond the shores of the of North America are there, but I don't see it being a points series. I don't see it being points races. I think the objective would be for us to look at filling this gap from October to March that we currently have. It's a long time that we're off, okay? And is there an opportunity to fill that in where it makes sense market-wise, but also where it makes sense monetarily for the teams and for the IndyCar series to make that happen? So there are always discussions going on in different markets. It's never easy. There's a lot of hand raisers that say, hey, come race here. When you get down to the details of those things, though, as far as timing, in terms of the money, in terms of what you're going to do to compensate the teams and the drivers, it's never easy. But I don't see it being a points-type series situation, Bruce. I see it being something as we go off in a one-off situation at the end of a season or before the start of a season where it fills in that gap.
Now, looking ahead to the rest of the season, after the Indianapolis 500 Open Test, it's what is generally considered to be the second biggest marquee event on the schedule, the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach, an event that's got Formula One history, it's got history with kart, it's got history with IndyCar, it's draws a really big crowd in Southern California, and just the excitement level, how do you quantify the importance of that event on the IndyCar Series schedule?
Well, I think you said it. I think after the Indianapolis 500, you know, Long Beach has certainly been one of the key tentpole events on our schedule, and it has been. I think this is the 49th year of its existence. So imagine next year celebrating a half a century of racing in a local market. Los Angeles is a very, very important market for us from a media standpoint and from a fan standpoint. We need to be there. We want to be there. We are there. And looking forward to being there for many more years. And Jim McCallion and his team have done a masterful job of creating an event, creating an exciting event where the paddock is so filled with people. The suites are always filled. The grandstands are always filled. The entertainment value he provides there is off the charts. So, Bruce, you said it. It's a very important event for us. We're excited to get back there here in a couple of weeks and get back to racing again and seeing these most competitive motorsports cars on the racetrack competing when they're within hundreds and thousands of a second apart in qualifying and typically between the matter of first and 10th place in a race.
As far as a promoter, you do the same thing in both Iowa and also Detroit. And later this year, you'll be involved with Milwaukee, even though it's the Wisconsin State Fair Board that's the actual promoter. But the thing about Long Beach is they've, for decades, had virtually nonstop racing throughout a three-day period and also concerts. So in a lot of ways, and we see how successful that has been there. So in a lot of ways, just how innovative were the people at Long Beach to be able to come up with that concept to give people basically a weekend that a lot of other cities try to emulate?
No, you're right. They've had great experience in what they've done for 49 years, right, of history. And I think now we've taken a lot of that playbook and moved it across the country. You saw what Kevin Savery and Kim Green did this year with Bret Michael in the park there in St. Pete on Saturday night. Thousands and thousands of people came down to watch a concert. May not have been fans at all of motorsports. Perhaps they are now because of coming down and seeing how cool that environment was. Same thing here in Detroit. You know, Michael Montry and myself have been running that event. It's my 15th year now being chairman for that event. And I'm so excited to have it back to the streets of Detroit again here May 31st through June 2nd. And we're going to be announcing our entertainment here in the next couple of weeks. We're going to move the entertainment from Hart Plaza to downtown on Campus Martius. A lot of new things there. But look at the one that's done it the best. That's Hy-Vee. What they've done in Iowa. They've taken what was a beautiful track and a beautiful layout and now have made it a Lollapalooza of Iowa in terms of the entertainment value you get from the concerts. And the four acts they have this year have outclipsed the amazing talent they have last year of Kenny Chesney and the other acts that were there. This year, we're up 22% in sales as of today for Iowa, on top of a very large crowd last year. So we're seeing this buildup of momentum. And thanks to the folks at Hy-Vee who've given us the opportunity to do that in Iowa, that we've got an event there each year. We've got entertainment value that's off the charts. A race that last year in one of our races had 1,500 passes in one race. The other one had 1,200 passes. Your head is on a pedestal moving around all the time because of how much action there is on this racetrack. And now we're taking that with Hy-Vee's support to Milwaukee as well over Labor Day weekend. And I think you'll see entertainment there as well, like we've seen it in places before. But as you said, the roadmap was written many years ago from Long Beach.
Speaking of Hy-Vee, they're now going to be involved with the June NASCAR Cup Series race and also be an associate with NASCAR at both Iowa Speedway and at Kansas Speedway. How do you view that since you're trying to sell tickets and you do very well for the July doubleheader IndyCar race at Iowa Speedway?
Yeah, you know, if you remember, if you go back a few years, there hadn't been any racing at Iowa Speedway at all, zero. And it was kind of mothballs other than the NARCA race. And the IndyCar series came in there with the city of Newton and the folks at Hy-Vee. And, you know, we worked a lot of hours in getting that place looking good. I don't know how many coats of paint we put in the place, but it looks fantastic now. And NASCAR now is bringing for the first time a cup race there. And they've been good partners with us as well. You know, we do a track rental from NASCAR. They've been very, very involved with us in our IndyCar event that we have there. Now they're coming there with the cup race, of course, and an Xfinity race. And Hy-Vee is a natural for them, right? You have a lot of the infrastructure in turn one already set up, Bruce, in advance for the NASCAR race. So the branding is already there from Hy-Vee, right? So for Hy-Vee to lend their support to the Xfinity race, and more importantly, for Hy-Vee to be, you know, the largest, the most successful retailer, food retailer in Iowa, makes sense for them to be involved in that. But also, remember, Kansas is a very important market for Hy-Vee as well, one of their key markets too. So they're now providing some support down in that marketplace at the Kansas Speedway. And hey, you know, no issue with me having them involved in NASCAR at all. They're committed to what they've done for the IndyCar series. I am so grateful for that. With Randy Edeker's retirement this past, this coming, summer, and now having Jeremy and Aaron and Donna and Matt and Ann and the whole team there, they're such great supporters, but most importantly, they're also great friends.
Well, one of the great things about the Hy-Vee stores and their relationship with IndyCar was from the beginning of the season through the end of the season, you could walk into any Hy-Vee store and they were fully committed to IndyCar promotion with life-size stand-ups of Christian Lundgaard, their driver of the number 45 Honda at Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing, and also other IndyCar-branded, Hy-Vee-branded displays. With the NASCAR involvement now, will that get diluted in any way?
I don't know if it will be or not. I'm not sure what they're going to have in store relative to NASCAR. I really don't know. But I know they're committed to still having so much more branding than they had in the past for IndyCar. You're, like you said, if you walk into a Hy-Vee store, sometimes think it might be a an IndyCar merchandising area. They do such a great job, but I also, you have to admire what they do with their partners, from the Pepsi products to the, you know, the partnerships they do across the board with all of their partners, beer category, food category, beverage category. They do an amazing job with their partners and outfitting their stores. So when you go to a store of Hy-Vee, anywhere in these marketplaces that there are promotions going on, same thing is true for NFL. In the NFL season, they're big supporters, obviously, of the Green Bay Packers, of the Vikings, and the Kansas City Chiefs. And you go to any store in those markets during the football time, they do equally as good a job of displaying promotional materials as well. So I give them a lot of credit. They're amazing retailers. They're innovative thinkers. And by the way, their service is some of the best you'll ever find at a retailer anywhere in the country.
And in a lot of ways, by joining the two series together, can that help further the entire cause for IndyCar?
Well, you know, as I talk with Jim France and Steve O'Donnell, Steve Phelps, Ben Kennedy, I think when one motorsports series rises, we all rise. Okay, and I think that's very true. And which is why we talk so much together now as motorsports series. For instance, you know, we're renting the track from them in Iowa. But also think about this, you know, we assist them in Chicago. People don't know this. We actually send our modular fences from Detroit to help the folks out in Chicago with their street course race. Those are the things we do together to help raise the sport than just being, you know, selfishly in our own silos to only focus on what we do ourselves. So I think when we all rise, when one rises, we all rise. And I'm a real believer in that. And we've seen that happen now in motorsports the last few years.
We'll be right back to Pit Pass Indy after this short break.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listenersurvey to help a show, and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Hey, everybody. This is Joseph Newgarden, winner of the 107th Indianapolis 500, and you're listening to Pit Pass Indy, presented by Penske Truck Rental.
Welcome back to this week's edition of Pit Pass Indy. Here is the conclusion of my exclusive interview with Penske Corporation President Bud Denker on Pit Pass Indy. Speaking of rising, the biggest tide there is in racing is obviously the Indianapolis 500. It's more than a race. It's more than a spectacle. It's really part of the American fabric. It's a great tradition that helps honor Memorial Day, one of the great holidays of being in the United States and being an American. But as you look ahead at the 108th Indianapolis 500, it really seems like you have succeeded in returning that into a can't-miss event for people all over the world to attend. And is that really one of the great things that has happened since the Penske Corporation and Roger Penske were able to purchase the Indianapolis Motor Speedway after nearly 75 years of ownership from Hulman and Company, that you've restored that prestige and made the Indianapolis 500 once again a place that everybody's got to be at that day?
I hope you're right in your words about we've done that, restored it. I think, though, our most important objective was to be great stewards for this iconic event and this iconic place. You know, the tabernacle of racing, right? This temple of racing that we have in Indianapolis called the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. You see the detail that Roger's put into it, all focused on the customer, right? The restrooms, the concession stands, the way the place looks, the appearance, you know, the all of the amazing viewing platforms that we've had now with more monitors than ever before, allowing people to watch the race. They're going to be amazed in turn four now with the view, the new hills we put in there, the new mounds for viewing this year that didn't happen before. And by the way, they're going to have monitors to watch the race in front of them all along that time. So every year we go back and look at feedback. We look at the customer's feedback. What's also amazing is this event, the 500 gets an 80 NPS score, an 80 net promoter score every year, which is just an amazing accomplishment thanks to Doug Bowles and his team. But I think you're right that we've restored that amazing heritage, but it's a pageantry about our country that is celebrated on a very important weekend to honor those that have, you know, died serving our country. And I still get chills. How many times I've been there? You've been there a lot too, more than I have, Bruce. When you hear taps, when you see the folks come across the start finish line that are on those pickup trucks that are in our service, it really makes you understand and appreciate what you have, but also makes you appreciate now too, for me, the fact that we got the Penske organization and the Penske family behind this thing for decades to come. And it's in very good hands, Bruce. I can tell you that. And I'm a proud steward. Roger's a proud steward. We're all proud stewards to be a part of this. And we're blessed to have it in the Penske organization's hands.
And how cool is it to have one of the great all-around drivers in all of racing, Kyle Larson, to be part of the field in 2024?
Yeah, that's this guy can drive he can drive anything, Kyle Larson. What a talented guy. We watched him, Roger and I watched him compete a couple of years ago at the Brian Clawson race. And you talk about car control and loose, tight, whipping that car around on that dirt track was just amazing. It's sometimes like men versus boys out there. He's just so much talent. And now seeing him do the testing and hopping in the car, going over 220 miles an hour, to see him hop out with a grin across his face, pretty special. So I'm grateful for McLaren allowing him that opportunity, for Rick Hendrick to allowing him the opportunity. Rick is a great friend of Roger and myself, so we're happy he'll be with us celebrating this race. I'm not even sure Rick's ever been to an Indy 500 before, frankly. He will be there this year. So, yeah, having him here, and now, of course, we're hearing from other drivers in NASCAR and other places who want to come race because of what Kyle's doing. So we're excited about it. He's bringing new people to the stands. Another thing I want to mention, Bruce may not be aware of this, is that we're going to have 40,000 to 50,000 people at the Speedway for the solar eclipse. Why is that important? Well, how many of those people have never been to the Speedway in their lives? from across the country, and now getting a chance to see the inside of this place and saying, hey, maybe I want to come back for a race here in the future. You never know, do you?
It doesn't really end there at the Indianapolis 500. When the checkered flag drops and the banquet is held the next night and the prize money is rewarded, it doesn't end for the Penske Corporation, because you got to go right off to Detroit for the Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix, which is a Penske Entertainment event. It's one of the things that's very near and dear to you and Roger Penske and everybody at the Penske Corporation. So how exciting is that for year two of bringing that thing back to downtown streets of Detroit?
Well, think about it. Less than 3 years ago, Michael Montry and I had the idea of returning the race to the downtown streets of Detroit. And anybody who knows how to put an event on knows how difficult it is to race in a municipal environment where you can't affect businesses, you can't affect commerce. You got to have people go on with their daily lives. Oh, and by the way, in the middle of our racetrack, we have an international border crossing that can't be closed. So all those things we mitigated last year and had an amazing first year event. And we learned a lot. The track has been improved in passing zones and passing areas. If you went down there right now, you'll see some new concrete being poured today and some various turns. Thank you for the city of Detroit for that support. So yeah, we're excited, Bruce, but I tell you what, when that checkered flag drops on Sunday afternoon in Indianapolis, I am on the plane and right back to Detroit to meet with my team Sunday night to be sure we're ready to go a few days later here in the city of Detroit. And our ticket sales are up here as well too. We're happy about that. Our sponsorship is up here in Detroit, and we are going to make a lot of people very proud when they see our city. And we got the NFL draft coming up in a few weeks in our city, followed closely behind by the Detroit Grand Prix. So we're on a pretty good march here in downtown Detroit for the next couple months.
And another addition of the schedule is actually not an addition. It's going to be a return of an old favorite, the Milwaukee Mile on Labor Day weekend. How much involvement will your team, the Penske Corporation, Penske Entertainment, have in conducting that doubleheader race, which is going to be very important because it's the next to last racing weekend in the championship season?
Well, it's a very, very important weekend for the series, but also think about this, a very important weekend for the drivers and teams and points. You're going to have 100 points dished out at the Milwaukee Speedway just before you go down to the Nashville Speedway. So three ovals in a row will determine likely your champion for that year. So we're very involved, and to answer the question, Michael Montry and his Grand Prix team in Detroit are the ones that are helping Sherry Black and the fairgrounds folks over there, Milwaukee State Park, to put the event on. Sherry and her team do a great job of putting on one of the biggest fairs in the country. Our team comes over there and lends the expertise on how to put a race event on. So right now we're in the midst of completing $3 million of renovation to the safety part of the track. The state of Wisconsin now, over last year and this year, will have improved the track by $6 million of improvements. So when you get there, you'll be very pleased to see the improvements that we've made. And we're actually going to make even more improvements between now and the 2025 race. So we're all over it. We talk about it every week in our update meetings. Ticket sales are going well, and we're ready to have a great first-year event there. I think first year in, what, nine or 10 years.
And I know that you don't have a whole lot of time left to talk, but just two more questions. Earlier this year in January, you met with a select group of drivers from the IndyCar series to lay out what your plans and visions were for the 2024 season. Are there any additional details that you can tell our listeners that they may expect to see this year?
Well, I think those meetings are not only important for the drivers and their feedback, but also for the owners and their feedback too. I think we have another meeting coming up in a few weeks with the drivers again, when they're in the, I think maybe next week, we're having another dinner with the drivers after the testing. I think we've got a meeting scheduled again with the team owners. So it's a great way for us to communicate back and forth our strategy. We provided to the team owners a lot about our vision for 2027 and beyond, getting their feedback as well. We've talked about the charter discussions been going on, obviously, as well. For the drivers, we obviously will talk about, you know, the plans for the rest of this year. I'm anxious to get their feedback on thermal. I've got a lot of it from a lot of people, and as well for that from that that discussion and dinner we'll have with them. So it's a great way for open communication, for us to get information from them and for us to provide information to them about the series. We want this to be collaborative. We don't want to have all our decisions made in a vacuum in the boardroom at the IMS Speedway by a few of us. We want to have an open collaboration between our owners and our drivers, and these sessions allow us to do that.
And oh, by the way, you've got a corporation to run. So how are you able to compartmentalize all of the racing business that Team Penske is involved in, that the Penske Entertainment Group is involved in, and run a multi-billion dollar business all over the world in transportation and other entities of the Penske Corporation? How are you able to juggle that many balls at once?
Well, you can't do it alone. And that is my answer. And yeah, we've got 74,000 people now working in this company, and it's a big company with that many people, obviously. But we've got a great team that that works behind the scenes that in our operations of our businesses, whether it be our truck leasing, logistics businesses, to our automotive businesses and others as well, too. And great leadership, great people, very committed to the Penske way of doing things. And we've also got, obviously, one of the best conductors of any orchestra in the world. That's Roger Penske in the middle of it all, with his conductors, you know, sticks. And we're here just playing different instruments at different times. And that's what I do as well. I play a different instrument part of my day with our automotive business, maybe a different instrument when I'm working on the Team Penske business or Penske Entertainment. But you can't do it alone. We've got great people, as Roger calls it, human capital. And we have that also at the Speedway now, and an IndyCar series with us as well, too. So you a little bit of time here, some more time there, wherever it's needed. But I can tell you this, Bruce, it's never boring.
It certainly never is boring. And I know that you're always a very busy guy, but you've always been more than helpful taking time out for the show and for me. Bud Danker, president of the Penske Corporation, good luck the rest of the 2024 NTT IndyCar Series season. And thank you for joining us today on Pit Pass Indy, presented by Penske Truck Rental.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you, all your listeners as well. And look forward to seeing you, Bruce, in Long Beach.
And that puts a checkered flag on this edition of Pit Pass Indy. We want to thank our guest, Penske Corporation President Bud Danker, for joining us on today's podcast. Along with loyal listeners like you, our guests helped make Pit Pass Indy, presented by Penske Truck Rental and Hy-Vee, your path to victory lane in IndyCar. On the highways, the raceways, and every pit stop in between, Penske Truck Rental keeps you moving forward. Gain ground with Penske. And for all your shopping needs, be sure to visit your local Hy-Vee, where there's a helpful smile in every aisle. For more IndyCar coverage, follow me at Twitter at Bruce Martin, one word, uppercase B, uppercase M, underscore 500. This has been a production of Evergreen Podcast. A special thanks to our production team. Executive producers are Bridget Coyne and Gerardo Orlando. Recordings and edits were done by me, Bruce Martin, and final mixing was done by Dave Douglas. Learn more at evergreenpodcast.com. Until next time, be sure to keep it out of the wall.